This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Let's try this again, shall we? Okay. We'll do a little take three. Welcome back to it. Oh, I think we're good finally here. Some gremlins in the system. We've changed locations, folks. We're working on it. We're down in our lower studio now at Canadian Tire Center for the rest of In the Box here on TSN 1200. And you know who's a trooper? It's our guest. Let's blame him. You know what? Let's blame a lawyer. That always works for me. Let's blame a lawyer. Eric Macromella, it is time for Out of Order on this Monday. Finally. Thanks for hanging in with us, Eric. How are you?
What I've learned over 25 years of practicing law is you can blame me all you want, just pay your damn bills.
That's right. You can call me whatever you want, but you know what? I am billing by the hour, and 1 minute over is another hour. That's all that matters. That's good. Yeah. All right. I'm going to have a chance to speak to the commissioner later today at the start
of
the pregame
show. Nice. I was wondering who would at TSN when I heard the news.
So there you go. And I'm just going to – you and I have been talking about many of these issues, so I think it's worth bringing up again here. I think maybe one of the things, time permitting, if we can get to it, I'd love to get the commissioner's take on and what he's willing to share about the future of regional sports and that model. As we continue to wait, we know what's happened with Bally. We know what it seems to be happening with AT&T as well, and that's a lot of regional sports, and there's other sports affected, but we'll stick to hockey here. And then you can get into revenue, Eric, and where the cap is going or where it's not going. What do you think the future is for the regional sports model on TV in the States?
That's, you know, that is, I guess, the most significant question that is facing three of the four sports leagues, the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball. And ultimately, if the regional sports network cannot continue to offer sports programming as they have, and that is a possibility, then leagues will, in all likelihood, have to do what Major League Baseball has indicated that they are likely to do, and that is take over the broadcasts themselves. The commissioner of Major League Baseball, Bob Manfred, has said, look, we have a really healthy balance sheet. This is something that we can do. And to make these games available to the end user via whatever application, for probably MLB at bat, which is what they would likely use, and you would find that on your, you know, on your TV, Apple TV, whatever it is, and go over the top and watch the games directly through Major League Baseball. The issue there is, you know, you need to allocate a brand new team to monetize and sell advertising for those broadcasts, because now that's how you're going to be generating revenue, because you can't sell rights fees to yourself, obviously. So it does become a little bit of a challenge, but I don't know if it's something that they're completely unprepared for. This is something that they have likely contemplated for some time in light of what was happening, not only with Bally, but just with cable cutting and cord cutters and cord nevers seeing cable subscriptions year after year decline and decline substantially. Such a material change that they had to really prepare themselves for a different way to offer up these services. So it's not a death blow, Steve. What it requires is just a massive adjustment and recalibration.
Do you not feel like, Eric, that all this has done is kind of hastened the transition that inevitably was going to come their way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they saw this as inevitable, and how could you not? I think since 2019, you've had 40 million U.S. subscribers cut the cord, and then 31 million since 2019 are cord nevers. They never had traditional cable. And so those numbers are significant. They're substantial, and they're alarming, or would have been alarming, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. But I've talked about this on Offside for the entire tenure of that show, which is over, you know, 11 years now. In year one, talked about cord cutters and cord nevers as, at one point in time, is going to force the leagues to shift. Now, the leagues don't include the NFL because a lot of their deals are national media deals, as well as their content is readily accessible and it is paid for, and there are no issues there. It's the other three sports, right? I think the NBA has got 16 teams on RSNs that are affected. MLB has 14, and the National League has 12. So when you meet with Gary Bettman, Steve, and And you know, that this is it's a good question to ask, is how do you intend to adjust? What will that adjustment look like if the RSNs go belly up?
And another thing is, and he was Gary Bettman, he addressed this at the last GM's meetings, which wasn't that long ago, and it was about the cap for next season, saying the cap right now is going up by $1 million for next year, but it could go up at around to $4.5 million more than it is right now if the debt's paid off by the end of the playoffs, which the commissioner then said that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. So that's a maybe, Eric. Failing that, though, he said the cap could also go up if they look at escrow again. And basically, you're increasing escrow to allow more money into the system for next season, but the players will still have to pay a little bit longer, a little bit more. Would it behoove the players to do that, to get more money into the system? And, you know, the new executive director has only been on the job, what, a week or so. How do you see that situation play it out? Would it be worth the players' while to do that, to take another look at escrow to get more money into the system for next season, or just let it be?
I'd say, hey, Gary, have you told the players that if the cap goes up not by $1 million, but let's say 5 or 6 or 7 million, that they likely won't get paid more? Have you told them that? See, if the cap goes up, fans, I think, benefit because teams have more flexibility. As well, teams will obviously benefit because of that enhanced flexibility. But for the players, and this is so important to remember, is no matter what happens, it's still a 50-50 split of hockey-related revenue. That's it. So over the pandemic, the players were paid a lot. They had escrow in place, 20% in the first year. I think it was 17% in the second year. The last 3 years will be at 10% because the players still owe the owners somewhere between $100 and $150 million or so. Gary Bettman has said it's closer to $100 million. Who knows what that means? But they still owe them that money because it's a 50-50 split. So it doesn't really matter what you could pay – you know, each player $1 billion, but they're still going to owe the league or owe the teams, and by extension the league, money so that the 50-50 revenue split is honored. So is it a good idea for the players? So long as they understand, and of course they will be made to understood and or understand, I'm sure that most of them already do anyway, given it some thought, that a higher cap doesn't mean you'll be paid more, even if your salary is higher, number one. Hmm. Number two, though, is it a good idea? I think it's not a bad idea for the players because it would afford the players more mobility and more in the way of player movement. And I think that's something players would welcome, because if there's a possibility and or threat of more player movement, then perhaps those players could leverage that for a higher contractual value.
Does... And maybe you guys paid a little more attention to this than I did, but does the tenuous situation with the regional networks potentially impact hockey-related revenue? And, in fact, could that make what the salary cap is going to be for next year, the ceiling anyway, and, of course, correspondingly the floor, can that also impact it, or has that been calculated into... the cap might go up $1 million next year because it feels like they're going to take a pretty significant hit on regional rights if indeed those rights go away.
So the reason the cap's going up by $1 million is because of the fallout from the pandemic. And so the league was deprived of such substantial revenue that what they were paying the players wasn't even covered by the 20% escrow.
Right.
So
yep.
That's a huge one. As far as regional sports networks, it's a big deal regionally for those 16 teams or 12 teams that I had mentioned, but insofar as how it affects league-wide revenue, I don't, and I, you know, you'll ask Gary this question, Steve, I think he will likely say that that number is not substantial enough so as to move the needle in a really negative way. The maybe the broader issue is they have these deals, national deals with Disney and TNT and Rogers, which by my math is about close to $1 billion a year. These RSNs going belly up, and these regional sports networks potentially disappearing after this season, kind of raises the question, the escalation in media fees that we have seen, is it sustainable? Because this, I guess this next point is pretty important, is that the leagues will shift to streaming more and more, right?
Yeah.
But the issue is streaming hasn't gained the kind of traction that maybe was expected. So that's a problem. Where are these eyeballs going? If they're not going to sports, they're going elsewhere, and you can't charge as much for those fees. That's the part, I think, that is kind of the is what has created some level of uncertainty with three of the four leagues.
Eric Macromello is joining us for Out of Order, as it is a Sens game day taking on the Panthers. But really, the big news of the day is, you know, Gary Bettman is in town. He's meeting with the mayor. He's meeting with the NCC. He's meeting with the Senators. The sale process continues. It's exciting for fans because we feel like we're getting a little closer to a finish line, and that we will know in fairly short order, it seems, relatively speaking, who the preferred group will be and or what that group will look like, and then the sale will happen at some point in the coming months. Interesting, and Chris and I were talking about this on Friday, Eric, that it does seem that, and this makes a lot of sense, this is a real estate deal as much as it is a hockey club deal. To that end, it would seem, and it does appear, though, that the prospective groups, I'm sure the commissioner is saying this to the NCC today as well, how about a little bit more land if it's going to be at LeBreton Flats? Because the one thing we've learned about transactions of this nature, it's kind of like building golf courses. CJ can attest to this. It's not just about the course. It's about what am I doing around the course? This is where I'm going to make my money. So, Eric, would you be surprised at this stage if it's going to be at LeBreton, if there wasn't more land on the table for the, you know, the winning bid?
Well, you know, as a side note, golf courses are really the height of privilege, isn't it? You have these massive, massive pieces of land that are just used so these guys and girls can go on the courses and play golf. It's really fascinating stuff. In order, the purchase of the Sens is a real estate deal. It is then a media deal. And then last, it is a hockey deal. You know, people ask me, Eric, you know, why do you, you know, look to buy properties? Because I keep telling them they're not making any more land. They're done making land. So I understand that they would want more land because the key to this deal is real estate. I mean, who are the potential buyers in part? The real estate companies. That's how this has changed, right? This is not how it was 30 years ago or even 20 years ago. Everything has changed. So the sale of the Sens, from my standpoint, is primarily a real estate deal.
Yeah, it's over the last number of years in all sports, right? Show me any ownership group, and chances are it's going to be a lot of real estate money or media money.
Show me the land. There's Tom
right?
Cruise.
There's
show
two
me
things.
The land. Show me the land.
Bruce,
someone can deepfake that if you want, I'm sure. Chris can probably deepfake that.
That's a rewrite.
Bruce Firestone was a visionary. He was one of the first guys to envision the hockey team being a draw, not the main thing, but just a draw to developing all this right around where we're sitting now. Ultimately, it happened when
this
you look at
light,
everything around here now. Yeah, exactly. And he didn't get the benefit, but all you have to do is look at Buffalo. What Pegula has done around the area of the rink there with the casino, the hotels, all that stuff that's been developed. And you want to talk about reinvigorating a downtown or a particular area of that downtown, down by the water there where the rink is. All that around there now has been completely redone and draws all kinds of people down there now who can walk out of the rink and go for a beer or go stay in the hotel across the street. And the practice rink, which they use for the NHL combine, Tampa, the job that Vinick's done down in Tampa in terms of developing all that waterfront property around the rink, there was nothing there when they first went. And now they've created that into an entire community. So you're absolutely right. The hockey team, even if they are valued at $1 billion now, might only be a quarter or a fifth of what winds up being the entire project.
Yeah, and you know, selfishly, I live in Westboro near Champlain Park, and so for me, it's a 5-minute bike ride or about a 30-minute walk to the arena if they ever build it there. And so that would be great. That would be terrific. And I know I don't stand alone there. Is that you have the centralized arena as well, and it just will reinvigorate the entire you know, that area, which is pretty barren, except for, I think, a library going up. And it seems like a terrific opportunity for the city to do something, kind of Lansdowne on steroids, you know?
And let's not kid anybody here, Eric. You would not be pedaling the bike to the rink. Your butler would be doing that, and you would be sitting on the back.
Not the back. No, I have a sidecar. I have a sidecar.
There you go.
And I'm
with a TV, probably, and bar service.
The butler
pedals. He's got bottle service in the sidecar.
A TV and bottle service in the sidecar.
There's somebody trailing in another bike. The cup pulls up alongside him.
Make it sound like this isn't normal. I don't understand. Like, you're laughing when you say it, but doesn't everybody have more money than they need? I don't really understand what you're saying.
Well, and also 30-minute walk, depending on how the evening goes, that's probably going to turn into a 50-minute.
And the other thing was,
meander home.
I do have two young kids, so usually. Yeah, I remember Daniel, who was 9 at the time. He was like 4 when we were in Westboro, and we bought him this motorcycle, like a little battery. And so I'm on Carlton, and he took this motorcycle all the way down to Wellington, as far as Parkdale, and then it died. And it was like literally 30 degrees Celsius. Humidity was about 17,000%. And I put him on my shoulders, and I carried this motorcycle with my right hand all the way home.
Oh,
and I remember I removed him from my shoulders, and he goes, "Daddy, you got sweat from your neck on my legs." I'm like, "Really? That was the least of our issues."
That's your go-to right now?
Yes.
Is this what we're talking about?
Dad of the year.
Oh, man.
We made such a big deal out of, oh, Eric McCormella hanging in because we had some technical problems waiting for us to come on.
Yeah.
You know that he wasn't on hold. His butler was holding the phone.
That's right.
Waiting to tell him, oh, they're back now.
There we go.
No, he actually just holds me in his arms while I do these segments because I do need the emotional support because, as you know, nowadays, personal feelings are really important.
Okay. Well, you hung in there with us. We appreciate it. So we'll cut you loose. Offside each and every week here on TSN 1200, and you join us each and every Monday. And sometimes we take three runs at it when we have technical difficulties, and you hang in there. So don't bill us, please. Give us a freebie, and we'll talk to you again next week.
My butler and I both love you very much.
All right. There's Eric McCormella each and every Monday on Out of Order right here on In the Box on TSN 1200. Joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. Okay, let's take a break. Panthers skates over. Gord was in on the Paul Maurice scrum. Maybe we'll get to that. Has always been, from the first time he took the gig with the Hartford Whalers in his 20s, Paul Maurice has always been great with the media, hasn't he? He's a good soundbite.
One of the best.
So let's see what Paul Maurice had to say. We'll get to that in our next segment on In the Box on TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
All right, 12:37 In the Box continues on TSN 1200. Steve Lloyd, Chris Stevenson, soon to be joined by Gord Wilson. Oh, we can't wait for that, can we? We'll see if he's any good. Gord, later on. Coming up shortly after 1 o'clock is our Sens and NHL Insider. Sens and Panthers on TSN 1200 tonight. Also, it's an obvious theme of the day. The sale of the hockey club is still top of mind for everybody, especially today because the commissioner is in town, who will be joining us off the top of our pregame show coverage, which begins at 5 o'clock this afternoon. Sens and Panthers coming up at 7 this evening. Speaking of the Panthers, they're on a bit of a losing streak right now, but they're in a better spot than Ottawa is, nipping at the heels of the Penguins and the Islanders. Big 2 points on the line for the Panthers tonight to try to inch closer to a playoff spot. Here is their head coach from moments ago, Paul Maurice.
You touched post-game last game on the pressure that comes with each of these matchups now. What's the biggest key in managing the pressure tonight against Ottawa?
I don't want to manage it tonight. You know, you want it to fuel you. You want it to be the fire that drives you. The key is putting it in the right perspective. And I don't mean a casual perspective like, hey, it's only a game. I mean, this is the exciting time. This is the games you want to be at your best. This is where everybody's watching in Florida and Ottawa and probably Pittsburgh and 5 other cities. We're all watching each other now. And you want to be at your best. You want to be that guy that had played his best game in the most pressure.
Any updates on Sam Bennett?
Sam won't go today.
Okay. And it looks like out there, at least based on the lines, we saw a good opportunity for Anton Lundell in that spot
tonight.
What do you want to see from
that? Was the simplest move that I didn't make three games ago after Sam went down. Because we liked Luostarinen so much in the middle of the ice, and it had something to do with our opponents, but we haven't been able to generate what we needed to. So it's Anton's turn. Like this is his second full year in the National Hockey League, and we need him to take that. Sam Bennett does some unusual things. He drives that line. He adds speed to Verhaeghe, which Tkachuk needs, and he's got the grit and bite in the game, which Verhaeghe needs. And we need Anton to come in and fill that role. He can skate. He's a fast kid. He's got to get on that body. He's got to get in the fight with those pucks. But he's got good enough hands to play with those two men.
And Coach, other news today, Zach Delpe, to your extension, you saw him a bit this
year.
How valuable is to have a guy like that in the org that really does such a good job mentoring in the pipeline?
I think I saw him about, 15 years ago in Carolina when he first came into the league. So critical to have the right kind of mentorship. But there's more to that because he's come in and he skates and he shoots and he can kill penalties. Like, he can do a lot of hard things that when you need a call-up and you need a few games, he absolutely can give that to you. He's in incredible shape. So he drives the game that he plays for us. He plays for the American League team as well. He plays that hard every day. And those are the things that you want those young players to see. Veteran guys toward the end of their career, but pushing hard. And he's such a fit man and such a wonderful skater that he'll play for a long time.
Bobby, not tonight?
Correct.
Your team at one point was 9 points out of a playoff spot. How much faith does that kind of give you, knowing that your team had the ability to turn things around and you're just on the cusp?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a couple of tough games for sure. Thought we played pretty darn well in Philadelphia on back-to-back nights, and I thought their goaltender was outstanding. We had a tough one against the Rangers. We've been a good hockey team since January 1st. Every single team that's in the situation that we are, and you can look down the hallway at Ottawa, they're going to have some games that just get away from them. And I think it has to do with the amount of pressure and the amount of motion that both teams will put into a game. And you go on your run, and then you get into a game that gets away from you, and you kind of break in that game. It happens in the playoffs all the time in series. So you got to leave it there. I mean, we had a discussion about our game, and we'll talk about it again today, the things that have to be in our game that weren't in that Ranger game. But we're also forward-looking with what we want to do here tonight.
Ryan Longreth's on a career year, has 11 goals right now. To have a guy in your bottom six who's putting up goal contributions like that when he's not a goal scorer,
right,
how important is he these last 9 games?
Well, his strength is his skating is fantastic. He gets in on the forecheck, and he's heavy on the forecheck. So when you get a guy in your bottom six sometimes, if he's up kind of a point producer that's not quite good enough to get into your top six, you kind of have to wait for him sometimes to have an impact on the game. Ryan has an impact on the game on the first shift. He can play his game, whether it's on 6 minutes or he's on 12, and he changes the lines that he plays on. He's certainly, Eric Staal has done a fantastic job with Ryan settling his game and really teaching him the game in a lot of ways, but Ryan goes on a line and he makes that line instantly faster, so it opens up the game for Eric as well, and it makes the players around him better.
There's Paul Maurice. He's been doing these media scrums for smooth, eh? He's been doing this a long time, and when he speaks about pressure of the situation, speaking from experience, and I like the train of thought about, hey, listen, this happened to Ottawa, it happens in the playoff series. Sometimes it just gets away from you. It's how quickly you can respond and move on from it. And basically, the Sens have like zero margin for error, and the Panthers have very little at this stage of the season, CJ. So that's why there's a little more juice with tonight's game.
I liked his point about when you're examining what's going on with your team, whether it's a win or whether it's a loss, you have to look at the way that you played. Did it look like what you want your team's game to look like? If you had your list of five things that you want your team to do to be successful, how many boxes could you check off out of the game? And, you know, Jacques Martin, when he was here, was always talking about the process. If you took care of the process, the wins would take care of themselves. And I think that's an important distinction to make, because certainly didn't we didn't hear anything that makes you think that, that Paul Maurice is rattling the cages and being like, oh my goodness, we've got to win. The tone very much was, let's focus on the things that we need to do to play the game that we think the Florida Panthers need to play. And I thought that was another good example of a veteran coach putting out the right vibe when it comes to his team and remaining in this race. You're on the outside looking in, but there was no hint of, you know, we need to be desperate and all that other stuff that you always hear. It was, you know what, we've been doing a lot of things well. There might be a couple more things we need to do better, but our game's close here.
I want a little Joe McGrath, actually. Boys, you're blowing it.
Scouts in the stands.
Oh,
with contracts.
They came here to see the Chiefs. The toughest.
Not this.
We'll stop it right there. Yeah, you know, it's important to try to keep things as level-headed as you possibly can, because once these games start at this time of year, the pressure does ramp up, and you can't be focusing on that or you won't be able to perform to the best of your ability. All right, well, keep your texts coming in at 12-1200. I had meant to get to more of them this hour, and then we had our little snafu, and we had to scramble downstairs, so we'll get to a few of them here.
Snafu is an excellent way to term it.
And we have our top people working on said snafu. So hopefully later in the day, everything is going to be no snafu. Let's put it that way. Back to the sale of the team and what that looks like. And it just makes sense that I'm sure that the NCC will be approached for more land with various groups. And so we kind of went down that road. This text came in. The whole reason the rink is where it is in the middle of nowhere is because Firestone owned the farmland. And how much did they say it would be worth now, $1 million an acre? Yes and no. That's not this. You know the history of this. Bruce Firestone wrote a book on this. Yep. If you want to go to the history as to why the rink is where it is, the first choice was LeBreton Flats.
Yep.
Okay? And Bruce Firestone went into great detail in his book that he published years ago on this.
It's a good read, folks, if you want to... a sense, yes. Especially newer fans, and that's the thing, as time goes on here.
This wasn't the choice to be here.
Right.
This was, how do we make it happen, period.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So the first, and I'll just do the Coles notes really quick for people that don't know. Bruce Firestone said, when talking with people at the NCC at the time.
Gene Piggott.
Yeah. The on-the-record conversation, yeah, this is good. We'll take this under advisement. Oh, great idea, blah, blah, blah. All right, now we're off the record. This will never happen. Yeah. We're going to tie you up in red tape for years and years and years on end because nobody here has the appetite for developing the land for whatever reason that is. Forget it. It's not going to happen. Back on the record. All right, let's keep plugging away at this, and good luck, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it.
So then the pivot happened, and the pivot was here. And then the story of people getting wise to, they're looking at this, and the middleman with the land, there was money made along the way. With people in between here as well. So that's the quick and dirty real version as to why the rink is here. The first choice was LeBreton Flats, believe it or not. And that's what I was shocked at the time. When we started this when did this start? 8 years ago? When
2016.
So when the NCC announced and we're all, wait a minute, the NCC started this process. Not anybody else asking. They came and said,
we'll take bids.
It's like, well, that's different. That has never happened.
Yeah.
And that's when I took it seriously. I'm like, all right, it's coming from that end of it. It's not people begging them to develop the land, which has been going on forever as that land's been sitting there.
Yeah. Under that original timeline, we should be in that new rink now.
Stop it. What are you doing? I'm in a good mood here today. It's a game day. We're going to watch a game tonight.
Just seems fitting on today of all days.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. Thank you for that. What else we got here? Caleb writes, According to ex-players, the hardest thing for a player to be in the NHL is consistent. It's split between the players and coaches on building those responsibilities. Regardless how this season pans out, the coaching staff will be leaving. They've done a great job keeping the room positive, not letting any of the young guys' confidence take a hit during the rebuilding seasons. No excuses, but I bet the staff system looks a lot better with Norris in the lineup. Our most reliable player comes in from Caleb. And this goes back into to the discussion that we had a little bit earlier of some of the same things that continue to dog this team defensively.
Yep.
Right? And this one came in, please just stop. The coach designs the system. The coach makes the players execute the system. If one or both consistently fail, it's the coach. KISS principle. I disagree. I say ultimately, yes, I do agree with you. Because part of coaching is, if it's not being adhered to, don't play those players. Maybe you got to be a little more aggressive that way.
Yep.
Right?
Question's been asked. Why, yes. Why was it Shane Pinto that got finally sat down for
yes.
a shift or two when Batherson and DeBrincat are deep into the negatives?
Yes. So my point has always been, though, it's never just one thing. I think there are times it is on the players. But when you get the large sample size that we have with the same problems, if I'm doing my pie chart, I can hear that's like, all right, what's going on here?
Yeah.
In terms of the system and execution of the system and discipline of the system.
Accountability.
As well. Accountability of that's discipline. I don't know if you noticed this, and you worked the game the other night. Timmy Stutzel had a tough night.
Yeah.
He was healing a lot of pucks, the turnovers, and listen, it's he had a bad night, had a tough night. And there was a point where he did miss the rotation of shifts. Started putting, the Pinto line was on the ice before a TV timeout, and the Pinto line stayed on the ice after the TV timeout. And then when Stutzel's line came out, Gambrell was in the middle for a rotation as well. But then it went back because, listen, he's a dynamic offensive player and you're down.
Wound up with two assists.
You're going to play him. Yeah, he had two assists and he did not have a good game. You know, that's the talent that he is. He can still make some things happen when he's having a tough game. So there was a little bit of that. I noticed he was sat down for a little bit. Not the whole game, but he missed a rotation. And it wasn't because of penalty situation or there was time here. There was a conscious decision made there, briefly. So,
and Graham and I had this discussion as well during the intermissions and post game. I didn't have as much an issue with Stutzla's turnover from the left wing corner that resulted in the goal as I did with Holden's play. Like,
well, that was
the concept of Stutzla's play was a good one, right? I don't fault the decision. The issue was the execution. He heals the puck and he winds up turning it over. But the thought was a good one. If he had made the pass that he envisioned, Tkachuk was up near the red line and the puck's going the other way and maybe they get a scoring chance. It was in the execution. Holden's was just a bad decision.
He got everything he wanted on that pass.
To me, there's a difference.
Yeah,
Stutz was a little bit unlucky on that one. He heals the puck. It looks bad. But to me, the overall thing, it wasn't a bad decision. Holden's was a bad friggin' decision, trying to pass it through the... Trying to pass the puck.
I don't think we're at the pub. We don't have to, these aren't beers. It's a coffee. Easy now.
That was a bad decision from top to bottom, trying to force it through the middle through a Devils player when you're the last guy back and you're just inside the blue line and you're over by the boards and you're hanging your partner out to dry.
And it was at the tail end of a sequence that was going horribly well.
Yes.
Wrong. It's like, oh, yeah. All right, they're going to get out. Oh, no.
And he could have walked it out.
Yes.
Anyway. All that to say, I didn't think the Stutzla decision was that bad. It was in the execution.
Honestly, with Stutzel, you're right. The majority of his, I'll call it tough night play, well, I don't know, like, did he change his stick lie for that game or something? It was kind of weird.
I was thinking, too, is like, did he cut his stick? Did he make his stick, like, a little shorter? Like, what changed? But, again, in the big scheme of things, here's a young center on the team, and he's all the way back deep in his zone to be able to recover pucks and help defend.
He's in the right spot.
So, yeah, I had a lot less of an issue with Stutzla's situation Saturday night than I did with some of the other mistakes that were made.
All right. Okay. All right, you know what? Let's take a break now. Because we had to play a bunch of spots here. We had our technical difficulties earlier. But we'll get out now because Gord's coming up next. We'll get to Gord just here at the top of the hour as our Sens and NHL Insider segment is nigh. Next hour, we got another code word for you. It's Artem Zub week for our Sens Adidas Pro Jersey giveaways. Be listening for that. We'll have a little bit of trivia for you at some point before 2. 4-pack of tickets to the Hurricanes game, final home game of the season, will be on the line. And also, I want to remind people, 67's playoffs begin this week. Kenny's resting his voice as much as he possibly can because he's going to be busy. First 2 games, many of you know, but if you have not heard, yes, we'll be across the river at the Slush Puppy Center for the home games for the 67s against the Oshawa Generals, Thursday and Sunday. Twice this week on TSN 1200, we're going to have all-day ticket giveaways starting tomorrow for the game Thursday. Each and every hour on our day parts here on TSN 1200, we'll have tickets up for grabs. And then we're going to do it again on Thursday for game 2 on Sunday as well. So we're going to do that twice this week, get you all fired up for what is hopefully a deep Ottawa 67s playoff run, which begins against the Oshawa Generals for game 1 at the Slush Puppy Center in Gatineau coming up on Thursday. And, of course, the voice of the 67s, Kenny Walls, resting up that voice between now and then. We're back in a moment with Gord on In the Box on TSN 1200.